This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, I'm Richard Adie. This is Best Practice. If you're injured at work, it can be a long, lonely road and it may not lead back to employment, but things are changing. In New South Wales, there's a government-backed social venture called the iCare Foundation, and it funds social enterprises trying to help injured people back into work. The focus is on the social needs of people who've often become disconnected after leaving their jobs. Two of the iCare Foundation's partners are pioneers in this field, and in a moment you'll meet a couple of people from an outfit called Craig's Table. But first, James Baker, who runs primary and community care services, which operates in Sydney's northern suburbs. James, how does the program work?
So Plus Social is a program specifically for people who've been injured at work, and it aims to look at their social and sort of non-medical needs. So traditionally, injured workers programs have looked at the people's recovery, their rehabilitation in terms of occupational outcomes, but we tend to focus on all the other things. So we focus on quality of life, social connectivity, and some of the practical things like financial supports, looking after kids and family, and the things that might come up that weren't there before when people were in the workplace.
You do something called social prescribing.
Yep. So instead of prescribing medication, we prescribe social activities in groups and social services and supports. So this can be done through a person's doctor, through their rehabilitation provider, or they can refer themselves in. And we try to connect them to things that are their interest as well as their needs. So we try to meet all the things that the current system might not meet.
So like joining a choir, joining Men's Shed?
Absolutely. So we try to utilize some of the existing groups like Men's Shed. We also run our own injured worker specific activities. There's art groups. There's some equine therapy groups.
That's with horses, yeah?
Yep, absolutely. Yep. There's gentle yoga. So some people might have musculoskeletal injuries, and we always make sure we don't have people doing activities beyond their certificate of capacity.
So what is the main thing you're tackling with this? Is it, I suppose, a tendency towards social isolation, or is it an encouragement to get out of the house, even though they might be having to deal with something like chronic pain now?
Absolutely, both of those things. So on the one hand, social isolation comes up for a lot of people after they have a workplace injury. A lot of people's connectivity throughout the day is at the workplace. A lot of people's friends happen to be the people that they share their days with. So after workplace injury, it can be quite isolating if your new routine involves being at home a lot more, visiting with doctors and specialists and rehab providers, the focus changes. So we try to first focus on that social side of things and reconnecting people back with their community and with peers. But the other thing is also fantastic is getting people out and moving. So with things like chronic pain, a lot of times pain restricts movement. So we try to put some other activities in place so there's more than just going to a doctor's appointment or more than just complying with paperwork.
Now, this makes sense to me. But do we have evidence that the focus on social interaction actually really works, or is that not known yet?
Yep, so there's lots of good evidence for social prescribing overseas. At this point, there's over 86 studies showing some improvements in quality of life, physical well-being, mental health well-being, just from getting out and doing activities. It's an untested concept with injured workers, but there's lots of evidence around the health and well-being benefits of social connectivity and having that sort of peer group of friends and supports around you.
So the feeling is that if you can get the health and well-being effects, you're much more likely to get back to work.
Absolutely. And with some of the early evaluation data from the midpoint review that just came out the other day, there have been improvements for our initial cohort of injured workers in terms of physical health, quality of life, mental health quality of life, overall quality of life. So there's some promising early results, but we'll still wait till the final version of the pilot.
Anecdotally, though, what are you observing?
There's lots of positive changes. So for some people, there's good relational changes in the family and the household. So someone might have been injured at work and they're not used to being the primary caretaker of children or aged parents. So there's a big adjustment curve. On top of dealing with the effects of an injury, which could be pain or isolation, they also have a new set of responsibilities that they're not used to. So there's lots of positive changes we've seen with family interactions and relationships. On the other side of the coin, some people who've, you know, been isolated because they've lost all their connections from work, after doing our program and getting out and spending time with other people and doing things other than just their appointments, they've started exploring either different pathways of doing similar jobs. So we've had some people look for non-physical versions of a job they've had. So instead of doing building, they look at doing drafting or alternative jobs. So instead of doing caretaking in an aged care facility, they look at doing art therapy in an aged care facility. So there's been some opportunity for people to explore new options and to really reconsider how they can get back into the workforce and into life.
I want to bring in Rosemary McKenzie Ferguson and Corey Williams, who together run a project in Western Sydney called Craig's Table. Rosemary, it's a kind of drop-in centre and training centre for people with injuries who want to re-enter the workforce. Is that right?
Pretty close to that. It is a community training centre and community engagement centre as well.
Right. Before we talk much more about it, can I ask you to tell me your own about your own injury? Because that sort of really got you on this road, didn't it?
I'm actually relocated myself over from Adelaide, where I actually wrote Craig's Table. My injuries are, I have a compression fracture in my neck and two broken shoulders. Technically, I am what the orthopedics call an incomplete paraplegic.
Right. Or an enormous opportunity to make money. That would be the other.
It's a great career move. I don't think so. No, it's about understanding. I do have a massive injury.
How did it happen?
I've just walked into a storage cupboard back in the days when we had storage cupboards actually built into buildings, not like the movable ones we have now, and had a whole lot of stuff just collapse on top of me.
Oh, God.
So that was way back in 94.
So what was it like back then navigating that, I think it's called the injured workers pathway?
Yes, it is. It was terrifying because one minute I was standing up and the next minute I wasn't. And nothing actually prepares you for that. It really is an instant change of life. And you have no pathway, you have no knowledge, you don't speak the language, you don't understand the terminology, you really don't even know what direction you're supposed to be going in.
We'll talk in a moment about Craig's Table, but I want to bring Corey in. You've got an injury as well, don't you?
Yes, I was injured in 2008 in an underground mining accident. I had a 13-ton rock drop quite violently into the back of a truck I was operating at the time and basically got shaken around in the cab and being in an air ride seat and with a seatbelt on, sort of strapped in for the ride, and basically just felt a crack or a click in my back. And within about 30 seconds to a minute after that happened, it all went numb from the hips down.
That must have been terrifying.
It was, that's probably to say the least, it was very, very scary.
And what was the period like after, I suppose, the immediate, it would have been an emergency response to kind of get you out, get you to hospital, all of that. Once you were through the most extreme part of it, what was it like?
It was the unknown set in, the unknown of, you know, whether I'd get back to work or whether they could actually repair the damage or, you know, the future for my young family. I had two kids under five with one on the way. So it was just, it was a nightmare.
How are you now?
Every day is different. I just take it as it comes. So I've only just recently this year come off a walking stick. So it's, some days are good and other days are bad. It's just taking it as it comes.
So when people come into Craig's Table, do you kind of recognise yourself a bit in them?
Yeah, for sure. That's the connection that we have there ourselves, is we've lived through it. We've been through everything that they've been through. So it's that instant connection and that trust is built up straight away with the participants.
Yeah. So if I came in, Rosemary, and I can't because I don't have a work injury, but
you're welcome to come anytime.
Okay. If I came, what would I find?
You would find something very, very unique. You would find a group of people who will never actually ask you about your injury or why you're there. They will just accept that you're part of the community. Someone's likely to ask you if you'd like a cup of tea or coffee.
Sounds good so far, I've got to say.
Someone's likely to show you where the train set is. Someone's likely to show you where the chook yard is. Someone's likely to walk you through the community garden. Someone will show you around Bay One. And someone will show you around the op shop. But mostly, someone will just say, hey, is there something I can do to help you?
That sounds great and welcoming and really important, but you actually run training there and it's quite demanding, isn't it?
It is quite demanding. It's a 12-week training program that takes you through everything from leadership day through to food handling, through to manual handling, through to being a fire warden. And we do emotional intelligence and we do a financial program as well, because it's really all designed to get people thinking about what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And where they're going to next. In many ways, we're just a way station along their journey.
So this program, it's all one thing. You learn all of these things.
Yes, you do.
And this enables you, I suppose, to kind of take stock and think, well, okay, now I can do this. I've got this. I maybe never thought I'd be interested in that.
We had that a lot. Our first day is the leadership day, and it's not leadership about going out and leading something in the community. It's actually about learning to lead yourself. Because the workers' comp system takes a lot of power away from a person. So the leadership day is about putting that power back in place.
Corey, I can see you nodding.
Yeah, no, it is. It's the whole program's designed to instill, you know, some of the skills you may never use, but it instills you mentally and physically to look outside the square, so to speak, but to move on yourself and get that confidence to make them decisions on what you want to do next.
And do you find that people end up deciding perhaps something they'd never thought of doing before?
Yes. We've got a car detailer there at the moment who's going to go off and do a horticultural course.
Right.
That's a vast difference to what she was doing before. And where she finishes up with all of that is really then under her direction rather than someone else telling her what she can or can't do.
I guess you're going to have some people for whom returning to work, it's not going to be an option because the injury is so profound.
There will be some people who will sadly be in that situation. But for them, we actually are just there. They can come in and be part of our social inclusion program. They will just be there playing with the train set, playing cards, playing board games, watching the TV, whatever it is that they want to do. That's what we're there for.
Being part of something and no judgment. And,
No, and there is no judgment. It's really quite interesting when everyone who comes in realises that they're just part of a team. And we all have injuries in varying degrees and we're just accepting of each other.
I want to come back to you, James. James Baker's Chief Executive of Primary and Community Care Services, which is based in Sydney's north. That thing that I was asking Rosemary and Corey about, do you have people who actually, in the course of starting the services you provide them, actually realise that they want to do something completely different and start moving towards that?
Absolutely. So some people, we provide a space, I suppose, to give them the creative thinking space to think about how do they want to contribute, how do they want to live their life. And some people do things that are completely different from their past. Other people, they use it just to have a bit of space from just focusing on an injury and feeling like an injured worker as opposed to a person. So I suppose it's more for them about just reconnecting with community and with themselves and having the space to think about how they want to move forward. And we've certainly seen people return back to the same job and had supportive employers who are quite happy for people to continue the program whilst making that transition back, which has been wonderful.
How much, and not just with the social prescribing, how much is it about rebuilding someone's confidence? Because there is an injury, and that's real, that's physical, maybe mental, but also your confidence, I imagine, is rocked by this sort of thing.
It's really difficult experiencing an unexpected loss, effectively, which is what it is. So I think it's pretty normal to have to go through a grieving process and to have to make a lot of adjustments. So I think confidence certainly can take a large hit, and having the opportunity to do things other than to feel like an injured worker or a patient or whatever language you want to use, and to feel like a person again and to re-engage in that sort of way, it's a huge opportunity. And it's fantastic that iCare has been investing in this sort of social venture side of things.
Mm. And if you could, I suppose, speak now directly to employers and managers listening to this, what would you ask them to think about when it comes to injured staff?
It's easy to see the fear side of things because the way Australia is set up is it's very legislatively governed. So it's about compliance and fear, and that's normal in any system of government. I think the important thing is if you think about it like a family member, you know, a son, a cousin, a nephew, or someone you love, or a friend, the approach you take towards that injury can be a bit different, and the sort of the way you react to that employee is different. So it's much easier to think about looking after how you treat your wife if she was injured than sometimes feeling like a part of a system where there's rules and risk. So I think just remember the people and it works.
Corey, I want to ask you and Rosemary, in fact, the same thing. What would you say to employers and managers out there who perhaps have never had to deal with an injured worker?
Take the humanisation into it. Don't treat them as their injury or look at them as a burden or that way inclined, but to look at them as a person aspect and have a look at the broader spectrum of it, how that injury affects the person, but it's also how that injury affects their immediate family. My injury, you know, I had the pain and the suffering and in and out of hospital, but it affected my wife and children more than it ever affected me. And that a lot of people overlook that side of it. And to look at it more in an open eyes, so to speak, is to look at how it affects the broader circle of that person and their lifestyle.
That makes sense. Rosemary, what would you add?
I'd add to that, first of all, we don't say injured worker, we say a person with a workplace injury, because that takes the injury out of the person and maintains that person's dignity. What I would add is these people are a part of a family. It's called the workplace family. So if we can maintain that workplace family, if we can maintain the connection there, that person will return to work in a more holistic manner than they do currently. And it's actually more cost effective to look at it in from a holistic family point of view than a legalistic medical point of view. It's just an inclusive way of doing it, and it's fairly simple to do. It can be as simple as just putting a notice board up in the lunchroom and saying that whoever the person is that's away, this is the treatment they're having, they're out of hospital, send them a text message, wish them well, all that sort of thing. It's interesting, we had one of our participants had some minor surgery over the Christmas break, and every one of them, of the participants, sent that person a text message to wish her well, followed up, how are you going, is there anything we can do to help? That's the sort of thing that should happen just as a part of a normal workplace. If you fell over on the ski field and broke your leg, that's what would happen. Somehow or other, we treat workplace injuries differently, and that needs to change quite radically.
That was Rosemary Mackenzie Ferguson, who, with Corey Williams, you also heard from him, runs a project in Western Sydney called Craig's Table. And there was also James Baker, he was a bit earlier, the Chief Executive of Primary and Community Care Services, a business that operates in Sydney's northern suburbs. And it's worth noting that apart from the human perspective in all of this, work-related injury and disease costs the Australian economy almost $62 billion a year, according to WorkSafe Australia. This is Best Practice on RN, the ABC Listen app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Aidy. We often hear on this program about the importance of soft skills in the workplace, the ability to work in teams and communicate well. These are seen as particularly important for workplaces of the future where automation might account for much of the technical side of things. But a report for the New South Wales Department of Education about what skills today's children will need has weighed up the evidence and found that specialisation, hard skills, are being overlooked, and that's a problem. The report was prepared by a multidisciplinary team at Sydney University's new Policy Lab, led by Professor John Buchanan, who's Chair of Business Analytics. Hello, John.
Hi.
Now, you found a widespread preoccupation with soft or generic employability skills, and at the same time a kind of belief that knowledge of expertise was almost outdated?
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose it was put nicely by one of the allied health researchers who we involved in the workshops, and she said, what's the use of being a good collaborator if you don't have anything to contribute? And there's a quite deep insight there, because she says in health, they do have collaboration across multidisciplinary teams, but people bring different dimensions of expertise to the problem. The issue is you've got to use that specialised expertise as the framework or the foundations on which you develop more collaborative skills and, most importantly, more problem-solving skills. You don't learn problem-solving 101. You master the idea or master the capability of unpacking a problem by getting a particular expertise.
Right. So there's the, I suppose, the content area. Say it's, I don't know, it could easily be solar energy engineering.
Mm.
That's obviously very practical. But on top of that is a kind of learning disposition
yes.
that you only get from getting expertise.
Well, we actually go the other way. We actually say learning dispositions are best acquired in infants and primary school.
Right.
And in a sense, we're not saying rush to expertise straight on. You want to give people a sense of curiosity. You want to give people the capacity to concentrate. You want to give people the capacity to learn from peers as well as their teachers. These learning dispositions provide the foundations which one can then use to develop a domain of expertise.
It's interesting because some of those things you're talking about, concentration, curiosity, employers are talking about wanting them now, and they've been sitting in those sort of soft, generic skills.
Yes.
One of the other things that you hear and read employers looking for are critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess that's going to come too out of having an education, perhaps that ends at university or in technical training, that gives you an expertise.
Like we give the example, there's been some very good research done in the German and Swiss apprenticeship systems. And they note that both of those systems still train watchmakers and clockmakers, even though there's a decline in demand in those sectors. But it's been identified that there's more training opportunities in those sectors. People who've got those deep skills can then move them into medical devices or advanced tool making. And so having mastered one particular domain, they then develop the capability to take that into other areas where there is, you know, a rising demand. But they've got to have the deep skills first to then be able to transfer them.
John, you and your team, I suppose, gleaned this by talking to the employers and the people on the ground. We need to get this to happen on a more regular basis, don't we? Kind of as a matter of course.
No, to be fair, I'm a workplace researcher and I've been talking to employers for about the last 30 years. But for this particular piece of research, we drew on the scholarship. So we went into cognitive psychology. We went into the philosophy of education. We went into the sociology of education. This is very much a scholarly work, which is based on what the leading scholars at the University of Sydney think about this. Happy to talk to employers. I think that's the next stage because there is often a disconnect.
That is actually one of the recommendations of the report, isn't it? That employers and educators need to find ways of engaging more.
Absolutely. And educators have been very open to drawing outsiders in. It's employers who've been quick to throw criticisms out, particularly employer bodies, and been very slow to actually step up to the plate and take direct responsibility or share responsibility.
Now, this report's really aimed at how in New South Wales the state educates its children, so beginning from kids to go to school.
Yeah.
What about for the school leaver in the next year or so? Does it have implications for him or her?
Absolutely. The underlying principles carry on into higher education, and I think the key thing that people should be thinking about is what do they flourish in? I think they should master a domain of expertise if they've got the time and resources and then broaden out. They shouldn't dive into doing a vocational degree because they think that's going to lead to a job. You know, in my own faculty, I'm from the business school, you know, accounting used to be recognised as a very safe degree. Well, accounting's being, it's on the block as far as threats from machine learning go. I think it's important that people develop a deeper capability in either, say, the arts or in science, maths or whatever, and then they can go back and then out of that generalise a broader employable capacity. And employers recognise that. If you're good at something, employers recognise that you've then got something that you can build on. But if you're trained in a narrow vocational area and the market shifts, then you've got a limited transferable skill.
Really interesting, John. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Professor John Buchanan from the University of Sydney Business School. If you want to find out more about the research we've just been talking about, you'll find a link on the Best Practice homepage at abc.net.au/radionational. That's it for this week. Best Practice is produced by Anne Arnold. Our sound engineer is Wayne Ewan. I'm Richard Aidy.